From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We have a lot to get to on today's show. A lot of it's going to be pretty serious, at least in the realm of, you know, the industry in which we work, in terms of, you know, the Georgia roster and how it shapes up for 2018. A lot of serious news on that. It's also NFL draft night. We've got a special guest coming up in a couple of minutes to help us preview what it's going to be like over the next couple of days for a lot of these former Georgia players going into the draft. So we've got some real hardcore football news to take care of over the course of our time together today. But if you don't mind, before we get into any of that, I did want to start with something a little bit more lighthearted and something that I just think is pretty fun, especially if you're a Georgia fan here. We talked about this, I guess we didn't talk about this in SEC Country Live yesterday. I think we're going to talk about it today. But we did talk briefly on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza yesterday, about what Tennessee has done. The tweet they kind of put out, sort of bragging here on this week of the NFL draft, about all the guys the Tennessee coaches have worked with who've gone on NFL futures. And you, if you're watching on video right now, you see that tweet. It says, "Be coached by the best, then become the best." It says 90 total NFL players have been coached by the Tennessee coaching staff right now. The only problem is, and if you see the graph, you can sort of tell this, and many people on social media have kind of already been reacting to this, interacting with this, is that most of the guys that Tennessee are bragging about here did not go to Tennessee. A lot of them were guys that either, you know, played at Alabama, which, you know, Jeremy Pruitt used to work, or played at Georgia, where not only Pruitt worked, but a lot of Pruitt's assistants also kind of came from Georgia. And just like the other day when Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M tried to do the same thing with guys like Jalen Ramsey, who he, you know, was a part of coaching at Florida State, there was just sort of bound to be some pushback from this. And I was sort of, you know, biding my time and sort of rubbing my hands together, waiting for that to happen. And indeed, it has happened. Former Georgia offensive lineman John Thea, seeing that his name's attached to this. I don't know why I think this is so funny, because at face value, it's not that funny. I think something about the way that he deadpans his response back, it makes it sort of funnier overall. He just simply tweets back to Vol Football, who created this graphic, "Can y'all take my name off this list, please?" It's almost like he got stuck in like a group email or a group text that he didn't want to be a part of. He looks at that and says, "Hey, I'm a Georgia Bulldog. Yeah, Will Friend was my offensive line coach. And yes, he's the offensive line coach at Tennessee now. But he didn't coach me. Can y'all take my name off this, please?" So I think that's pretty funny. And, you know, obviously this is not that big of a deal one way or another. As I said on the show yesterday, I don't think that you win recruits by these kinds of graphics. I don't think, even though fans like debating who is running back university and who's defensive back university, who's linebacker university, that's fun for fans. And it makes, I guess, for, you know, some job opportunities for graphic departments. But ultimately, you know, guys don't choose schools that way. Guys choose schools because of relationships. It's who can develop the best relationship. That's the guy who ends up sort of winning the most recruits in a scenario like this. But I guess, you know, the only somewhat serious point I'll make about this is, you know, I just referenced that what Tennessee kind of put out there as a graphic, it wasn't that long ago that Texas A&M was essentially sort of putting out the same graphic going back to Jimbo Fisher's time at Florida State. This is essentially a copy of that. On SEC Country Live yesterday, we played a brief snippet of a video about Tennessee bragging about its new weight room. And if you do side-by-side comparison, that video from Tennessee was almost exactly like a video that South Carolina had produced and published a couple of weeks ago, too. And kind of on and on you go here, where for the moment, Tennessee, for its recruiting efforts, seems to be simply making the same sales pitch that other schools have been making longer or other schools are making better. You know, Tennessee's bragging about having Jeremy Pruitt, the former Nick Saban disciple, defensive-minded head coach, bringing toughness and tenacity to the program. But my gosh, doesn't what Tennessee says about Pruitt just simply sound like sort of a watered-down version of what back in 2016 Georgia was saying about Kirby Smart? And they've had a two-year jump on Tennessee in terms of sort of making that pitch, and obviously they're able to make it to more in-state recruits than Tennessee's making. So no serious point to a make here, but I did love John Theus's response to that. It's, you know, not liking seeing his name there. A lot of recruits are going to feel the same way. And for Tennessee, this sort of feels like a sort of a stubbed toe, a failed attempt to build some recruiting momentum. When you're a first-year head coach, I guess you do what you can. But this one seems to be falling flat for many people around SEC country. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're glad to have you with us, and glad to have our presenting sponsor, Marco's Pizza, on board here as well. A lot of fun coming up today and a lot of ways you can catch up with us. We are available on video all over the place. Of course, Facebook, 10 a.m., the Dog Nation Facebook page, YouTube as well on the Dog Nation YouTube page, and now broadcasting and streaming at the same time every single day on the Dog Nation Twitter feed. For those of you checking out the show for the first time because you saw it pop up in your Twitter timeline, thanks for being with us here on the Daily Podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. As I mentioned, Marco's Pizza, of course, makes it all happen for you. And right now, Marco's has got a great offer for you. They want you to meet the boss of all cheese pizzas. And boy, this is a good one. It is the Big Cheese from Marco's. It's five cheeses blended together, melted on top of an authentic Italian crust. And for right now, you can get the extra large for just $10.99. But you've got to act fast. This is just a limited time offer. You need to go to Marcos.com to find the Marcos nearest you and take advantage of the big offer here, the Big Cheese, $10.99 for an extra large. It's great to have Marco's Pizza here as a part of Dog Nation Daily each and every day. We are busy on today's show. Later on today, I guess about, 25 minutes or so from right now, I'm going to bring in John Shin, who works for our sister site, DieHards.com. Now, you may remember John as a one-time guest here on our program dating back to January. He covers the Oklahoma Sooners, and we talked about the Rose Bowl then. I'd already planned on bringing John in this week because I wanted to get some insight from him, sort of some enemy intel on Jay Hayes, the one-time Oklahoma commit who Georgia was in the mix for, the defensive line transfer from Notre Dame. Well, as you know, Hayes has now decided to come to Georgia, so Shin's going to give us some info on that coming up a little bit later on, a little bit different kind of interview than we initially planned, but still really good stuff coming up from John Shin. Also, in a little bit less than 10 minutes, I'm going to say hello to Chase Goodbread from NFL.com. Chase is a super sharp football draft analyst, kind of covering for NFL.com, the NFL draft from a college football perspective. Where does Roquan Smith go? Where does Sony Michel go? The NFL draft futures for all the great former Georgia Bulldog players. We'll get a lot of that coming up with Chase Goodbread from NFL.com here in a couple of minutes on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Before any of that, as I said, there is one sort of big story out there for Georgia football here today, and really, the backstory for this kind of goes back to the early portion of spring practice when Kirby Smart made no bones about the fact that he was concerned. He was concerned about what he was seeing from his defensive line during practice, not enough depth, and frankly, not enough beef. Here is a reminder from Kirby about what he viewed as one of his most vulnerable position groups back at the beginning of the 2018 spring practice.
We're struggling a little bit defensively on the defensive line. We just don't have as much depth, and we're not as physical as we need to be. And I don't know if that's a credit to them or a problem for our defense, but something we got to rectify, and we definitely need some help on the depth of the defensive line.
Need some help on the depth for the defensive line. Just need more bodies in the fold there. And Kirby Smart was asked, you know, what about, you know, some of those incoming guys? You do have two incoming freshmen will arrive later on the summer, Jordan Davis, Tramiel Wathauer. You know, they're both guys to be able to add into the mix there. But as Kirby Smart explained, just adding Wathauer and just adding Davis, in a lot of ways, not enough guys at that position.
Not many in that position. So, we're excited about the guys we got coming in. I think it's tough to play as a true freshman. You know, we had that crowd of Tyler and Julian and Mikhail and David, all that really helped us that one year. We're certainly going to need some help in depth-wise. I think the key is going to be staying healthy because losing two guys like John and Trenton, I don't think you'd think it would have as much of an effect, but we really only gained one in Devontae Wyatt. So the sum effect of that with Michael Barnett being a little out has put us short some.
There was also then the Justin Young injury as well. And, you know, Kirby Smart says it's tough to play the defensive line as a true freshman. Really, if you look at some of those, like, you know, I think I've mentioned this before, go look at the All-SEC teams. You see freshmen now pop in there as potential All-SEC players at virtually every position. Now, even the offensive line, it's become a position where a freshman can be an All-SEC guy. Even quarterback has been that a little bit here as of late. But defensive line is still one of those positions, as Kirby Smart said, where it's tough to be a true freshman and play. So if you can add someone that's not a true freshman to contribute to your depth, that's potentially a big add for a program like George. And on Saturday, the Dogs had themselves a chance to host one. Now, Jeff's Sintel talked about this on Tuesday when he joined us here on the program, that it was really one of those big recruiting wins potentially for Georgia over Alabama on Saturday. Remember, the Georgia G-Day game and the Alabama A-Day game are going on at the same time, and there was always going to be that interest to see who the overlap was in terms of who is it Alabama that might could have been at Georgia, or who is it Georgia that might could have been in Alabama. Well, for Georgia, one of the big wins on Saturday was it was able to get on campus the Notre Dame grad transfer defensive lineman, Jay Hayes. Here is Jeff from Tuesday explaining why.
Georgia got Jay Hayes, the graduate transfer who just committed to Oklahoma recently when Alabama was expecting him. I know people are kind of indifferent about Hayes. Was he a major starter at Notre Dame? Was he an impact player? Do they remember him wreaking havoc against Georgia and South Bend? But what he would be a depth guy. Georgia definitely needs defensive linemen, and it's also a case where he would be a graduate transfer, and that would just be a simply a one-year scholarship there, not a four-year scholarship there.
I realize it sounds like Jeff's careening down the side of a mountain there, but I did think the information was good enough that I wanted to provide that in there, because for all the reasons why he just described, it makes Jay Hayes kind of an interesting prospect. A, how much do you love the fact that here in the middle of the spring we're talking about a Georgia win over Alabama? And you can go look at some of these Alabama message boards. They were mad as could be. Some of these fans were mad as fire that Hayes was at Georgia on Saturday instead of being Alabama. You know, Alabama fans still sort of have that thought that it's their birthright to get a player when they think they want him. And despite the fact that he was an Oklahoma commit, a lot of these Alabama fans wanted to add another defensive lineman here who might be able to play and contribute to depth, because as Saban said back in February, they need some of that help there as well. But for Georgia, there's a lot of other things to potentially like about Hayes here, too. You know, he is one of those guys that's just a one-year guy. He doesn't occupy a scholarship for years going forward. This is a guy that comes in and either plays and contributes or he's gone after this year. You're essentially not going to use that scholarship, you know, anyway here. And if you look at the numbers, and we'll get into more of this later on when John Shin's on the show, he had tackles against Georgia last year. I think he had 7. One of the Georgia reporters this week tweeted out some of those Pro Football Focus numbers where, I mean, his grade on run stop percentage was pretty strong. This is a guy that did not perform poorly when he played a season ago for Notre Dame, potentially a reason to like Hayes. And for Hayes, apparently he's also liked Georgia for a while as well. He comes from the same high school as a current Georgia player and has been thinking about the Dogs apparently for a number of years. Here's more of Jeff Sintel on that point.
He's from Poly Prep in Brooklyn. That's the same high school program which produced Isaiah Wilson, so I'm sure he's heard big things. And if anybody wants to research his recruitment and go back to when he was making his decision in 2012, Georgia was always one of his favorite schools that he was going to really pay a lot of attention to if he ever got that offer.
So if you're paying attention, and maybe you don't know the outcome of this story, you start to see how things kind of come together here. He liked Georgia for a long time. A guy from his high school way up in Brooklyn, New York, is currently at Georgia. He's looking for a new college home, and poof. All of a sudden, you have the magic formula that leads to Jay Hayes tweeting what he tweeted yesterday. And if you're a Dog fan, I think you view this as good news. Hayes says, "This is it. In a month, I'll be heading down to Athens to play for the Georgia Bulldogs. Go Dogs." And he gives you a string of emojis, the red, the black, the dog, the fist. And he gives the chain emoji here. I don't know if that means that he's getting ready to wear the same big chain that John Atkins wore a season ago, but it's kind of a nice thought to think about nonetheless there as Jay Hayes joins the Georgia Bulldogs here for 2018 as a graduate transfer. Now, some people are going to be saying, but what about those scholarship numbers? What about trying to get down to that 85? That's always an issue for Georgia because of, you know, the roster management that Kirby Smart's going through. But as Kirby Smart's explained before, that when it comes to the numbers, they're not worried about that. They're worried about getting the best possible players. Here's Kirby.
We don't sweat numbers. I mean, we do the best we can to get the best players we can, and we do a real good job of evaluating them. We try to get every good football player we can that can make our program better, and that's our goal each and every year, is to upgrade that in character, academics, and on the football field.
Goal every year to keep upgrading talent. Georgia's done that a lot. I call these waiver wire additions. Georgia did it a season ago when you bring in J.R. Reed. He becomes a starting safety for 2016. Mo Smith, the defensive MVP. Tyler Catalina was able to become a starter at left tackle. This action during the spring and summer when Georgia brings in players, if Kirby Smart identifies one, that's typically going to be a guy that can play. And I think that Jay Hayes not as a starter, not as the leader of the defense necessarily, but as a contributor to depth. I think Jay Hayes has a chance to provide that. And in terms of how Georgia does get down to that 85, well, expect some movement, I guess, from some guys who are planning on pursuing football opportunities somewhere else. Maybe the latest to kind of fall in line with that is linebacker Jaleel LeGuenz, who was a four-star signee from the class of 2016, but LeGuenz kind of making it be known this week that he's ready to move on and start the next phase of his career. And we'll say about LeGuenz what we have said about so many of the guys in this situation, that we wish them well. You know, I'm a big believer that college football players deserve a chance to play. And, you know, sometimes, even though LeGuenz grew up very, very close to the University of Georgia campus, I'm sure it was a dream of his to be a part of the Georgia program. Not going to work out for him at UGA. He's getting ready to move on. We wish him well. And it looks like Georgia's going to be able to get down to that 85 number. As Kirby Smart says, it still tries to push and build the biggest overall roster possible. It's great to have you with us today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We'll get back to some of this stuff a little bit later on. For now, though, let's turn our attention to the NFL Draft. He is a great expert from NFL.com. He is Chase Goodbread. Let's welcome him to a Dog Nation Daily right now. And I'll say hello to Chase Goodbread. Been covering the college football scene, the NFL draft for a long time for NFL.com. Back here on Dog Nation Daily for the first time in a while. Chase, thanks for your time on the show today. We really appreciate you making some time for us. I know it's a busy day for you. How are you today?
Doing fine. How are y'all?
We're doing really well. Let me start with the guy, I guess, from a Georgia Bulldogs perspective that's going to go first, at least from the Georgia contingent tonight. That's the linebacker Roquan Smith, the Butkus Award winner. Some of the mock drafts that I've seen as of late, Chase, including your colleagues there at NFL.com, make it seem like Roquan's got a really good chance to sneak somewhere into the top 10 tonight, which would be a great honor, obviously, for him. Do you see a top 10 result in Roquan Smith's future here tonight?
I think there's a great chance he goes top 10. And I think if you're Roquan Smith, what's just as encouraging is that you got a high floor, right? Because there are some guys that could go in the top 10 that might not go in the top 20, depending on how things break. That's not Roquan Smith. He's so highly regarded, I think, among NFL clubs. I know his film's great. He tested great. He interviewed great. He's got every box checked, and I think what that means for him is that if he doesn't go top 10, his wait is not going to be long. I would be shocked if he's not gone within two or three picks of the top 10, if not in the top 10.
And, Chase, what I like about talking to you about stuff like this is, you know, you get it on both sides here. This is obviously a big addition to somebody's NFL roster tonight, but you understand college football. This is a little bit of a bittersweet night for a lot of people who listen to this show right now in terms of you see him go on to a great NFL future. Dog fans are excited about seeing him get a chance to cash that big paycheck. But, boy, what a tough player that's going to be to replace for Georgia in 2018. You're going to see a lot of highlights from the 2017 season for him tonight on TV, and a lot of Georgia fans are going to be wondering, hey, who's going to be doing that stuff for Georgia in the future, right?
The good news on that is that the more Roquan Smiths you have that end up going in the first round of the draft, the more – top guys, four-star guys, five-star guys you can get on the other end in recruiting. I mean, how well you do in the NFL. Look, today is as big a day for recruiting as the year in terms of being able to generate interest and respect from recruits. And so, yeah, no doubt about it. It's a huge void to fill for Kirby Smart and his coaching staff. But the flip side of that is the more of those type of guys you have, the easier it is to get more.
It has been fun watching Isaiah Wynn, I'm going to use a phrase, climb up draft boards. I don't know if that's really the case or just the media becoming acquainted with what NFL teams may be viewing about him. It seems like that he's in a lot of first rounds in a lot of these mock drafts that I'm seeing. Obviously, Georgia fans grew to appreciate Wynn over the course of the years because he played multiple positions, was a great leader. What is it about Wynn in particular from the NFL standpoint that people like about him? And I guess along with that, do you think Wynn will be a first-rounder tonight?
I do think he'll go in the first round. And his versatility is impressive. I think he ends up playing guard at the next level. I know he was at the Senior Bowl and impressed a whole lot of people at that spot. But first of all, this isn't a great draft for offensive linemen to begin with, and that helps Isaiah Wynn. You know, some drafts are loaded enough that Isaiah Wynn would be a second round pick. In this particular draft, where things are a lot thinner, he's got a much better chance to go in the first round. I think he'll be the second Georgia player selected. And, you know, if you look at what else is out there, you know, Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame is an off the charts offensive guard. I think that guy is going to be an all pro. He's phenomenal. But when you get past him, you know, you got the Hernandez kid. There are a few guys, but it gets thin on the interior, and it gets thin at tackle too. I mean, beyond you know, McGlinchey and Connor Williams, I don't think it's a great tackle draft either.
Not every Georgia fan is a Falcons fan, because obviously not every Georgia fan lives in the city of Atlanta, but some of them are. I guess it seems like there is at least some chance, given the Falcons need at guard, that the in-state product could end up in Atlanta. There's a chance the Falcons take Wynn tonight, right?
I think there is, and I've actually got a little brother who's a big Falcons fan, and he thinks they're going defensive line, which they very well may. You know, a lot of these mock projections have Atlanta taken Taven Bryan or some other defensive lineman. I kind of think offensive line is where they ought to go, and Isaiah Wynn would be a great fit there. They're okay at tackle in Atlanta. But I think they could use some help at guard, and Wynn would be a nice fit in there.
So Sony Michel, you know, once again, my reference for this kind of stuff is what I'm seeing on mock drafts. And as of late, some of these have him in the first round, which is probably an upgrade from an opinion standpoint from where it was when this draft talk started a couple of months ago. Is there a chance here that Sony Michel is a first-round running back tonight?
There's a chance. I think he's more likely to go in the second round, but and when you get down to the 30 to 32 range, you know, maybe he does get the call. And, you know, what could help too is a lot of times you'll see teams trade up into one of those late first round picks with a second rounder. And one reason that you see that happen is because when you pick a guy in the first round, you get that fifth year option under the collective bargaining agreement on the contract, so you can keep the player, you know, under control for another year off the rookie deal. So there's a lot of activity there. They like to trade up early in the first round, and they like to trade up late in the first round too. So a lot will be going on for Michelle and his agent at that point in the draft.
As fans, I think sometimes we assume that big games lead to big NFL opportunities. Sony was great in the Rose Bowl, probably better than Nick Chubb in the national championship game, even though Georgia lost to Alabama. How much does that help Sony Michel's draft stock that, you know, he was very good in the most important games that Georgia played and, frankly, you know, some of the most viewed games of the season from a TV rating standpoint? Does that truly help Michel with NFL teams?
I don't necessarily know that. I think when it comes to scouting, it's big for him that he played well against the toughest competition, right? Like the scouts sit down and break down tape. They don't care how many people were in the seats. They don't care what the TV ratings were. They really don't care how grand the stage was for the college level. But what they do care about is he running for 150 yards against Troy, or is he doing it against a top-notch defense? And by extension, most of these big games you're talking about are going to be against outstanding defenses. Certainly Alabama's was. And so to that extent, yeah, absolutely. When you show well against good competition, it can make you money. There's no question about it. You know, there's a kid named Forrest Lamp who was a left tackle at Western Kentucky last year, who had a phenomenal game against Alabama, going up against Jonathan Allen and Ryan Anderson and all these guys. And that game, to a large extent, helped put him on the map and made him some money.
So let me run a crackpot theory by you, and I'm probably a little bit biased on this, but I believe that the closer we get to the draft, the more, and I love hearing the talk about Sony Michel, don't get me wrong, but I feel like that Nick Chubb is becoming a slightly underrated prospect, especially in comparison to Sony Michel. And once again, I know that, you know, I may not be the most objective when it comes to this, given, you know, what I do for a living and who I talk to every single day. But this is a guy that caught the ball out of the backfield as a freshman, you know, now, what, more than 2 years removed from the injury in 2015. 2019. Is there a chance that, you know, some people in the media, maybe even some NFL teams, are sort of viewing Chubb as less than a running back than he truly is?
I think there is. You know, I got a chance to do a long-form feature on Nick Chubb last September and was highly impressed with you know, I did a lot of interviews for that piece, and I couldn't find anybody that wasn't crazy about the guy. The medical issue obviously is something that teams are looking at close, and you got to keep in mind with these medical examinations, even if a guy is completely healthy, the NFL club, and I'm speaking generically here, I'm not speaking specifically about Chubb necessarily, sure. But even when a guy does come back 100% from a serious injury, sometimes these NFL clubs will get him in these medical exams, and one club will look at the X-rays, the MRIs, et cetera, and say, okay, this guy's clean. He could play in the NFL for a long time. Other clubs might look at the same MRIs, the same X-rays, the same data, and say, yeah, he's healthy now, but the way we look at this, he could be a 3 or 4 year player only, because this thing could jump up and bite him again. And so that's where the rub comes in for a guy like Nick Chubb. Even though he's healthy and even though he's looked outstanding on the field last year coming off that injury, clubs aren't necessarily going to have the same opinion about his longevity as a pro.
You can find him on Twitter, at Chase Goodbread. Read him at NFL.com. The great feature on Nick Chubb and a whole lot more. Chase, thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate your insight on the draft. We'll look forward to reading a whole lot more from you and hopefully get a chance to talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, Chase Goodbread, super sharp guy, at Chase Goodbread on Twitter, NFL.com. And, you know, when you do what I do for a living, y'all know I'm not the world's biggest NFL fan. You know, Chase is a good analyst to have on because, you know, Chase, you know, sort of came up the ranks as a college football writer. So even the stuff that he writes now, he sort of writes from that college football perspective. So that's one of the reasons why I like having him on the program. Don't forget, we're also in a few minutes going to have another guest in the show today, John Shin from our sister site, diehards.com, covering the Oklahoma Sooners. We were originally going to talk to John about Georgia's chances of wresting away the Oklahoma commit Jay Hayes away from the Sooners. Now that has happened, but we'll still use John to give us some thoughts on what he saw from Hayes when he was destined there for a Norman, Oklahoma. For now, though, it's SEC Through time. Don't forget to check out SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, SEC Country Facebook and YouTube, Twitter pages today. We'll talk about the SEC there. And one of the stories we got into yesterday that I'll mention as a follow-up today, because we also covered it here during our SEC Through on Dog Nation Daily a day ago, Jack Driscoll, the offensive lineman, making it official on Twitter that he was going to choose Auburn with the Notes app. Everybody does that now. So he is going to go pursue an MBA at and play football at Auburn University, choosing Auburn over both UCLA and USC. Those are the other schools there in the mix. He comes from UMass. And listen, I think this is a good addition for Auburn. They wanted an offensive lineman. They tried for Calvin Anderson from Rice earlier. He stayed in-state and chose to go to Texas to play with Herb Hand, the former Auburn offensive line coach. They'll bring Driscoll down here. Obviously, Massachusetts summers are very different than Auburn summers, Alabama summers. So we'll see how Driscoll sort of adapts to the heat here. But he comes down, and I believe, am I saying this right? Did Mike Johnson tell us yesterday that he's actually got 2 years left there for Auburn? So that's both a good and a bad thing in that you get the you know, get the second year. If he's a contributing player, that's a good thing. If not, you've ended up tying up that scholarship the extra year. I thought it was interesting that Philip Fulmer, the Tennessee athletic director, has, according to 24/7 Sports, you know, Fulmer speaking at one of these, I don't even know what they are, you know, like spring speaking tour type events, was asked by some reporters about what Jeremy Pruitt said about Tennessee fans and not filling Neyland Stadium more than the 65,000 they were credited with having there. And at least publicly, Fulmer supporting what Pruitt says. We'll have the full quotes for you at SEC Country Live later on this afternoon, essentially making it sound like, hey, he just wants everybody to be, you know, at the championship level, including the fans. I wonder if privately that's indeed how Philip Fulmer feels on that. But it is kind of interesting that Fulmer speaking out on it. Obviously, I wouldn't expect him to kind of go against Pruitt publicly right now, but this is one of those issues where I have wondered if there would eventually be some sort of maybe some sort of collision between both Fulmer and Pruitt. We'll see how this plays out. It is one of those acts that has seemingly divided some Tennessee fans who want to say, yeah, Pruitt, you're right, give us hell. and the others who say, hey, you know, maybe lay off. We've had kind of a rough go of it over the last few years. But speaking of spring game attendance and the $65,000 that Tennessee was credited with, but that Will Muschamp had a funny line this week. He's also speaking at one of these off-season speaking tour events and saying he feels like South Carolina got robbed, that they only were, I guess, given credit for like 25,000, whatever the official number was. There was terrible weather in Columbia that day. But once he saw, you know, the exaggerated figures at a place like Tennessee, he's like, we should have given ourselves credit for at least 50,000. We'll talk more about this on SEC Country Live later on today, too. And it is kind of funny that, you know, some of these schools that went first sort of, you know, mentioned a relatively small number. They were impacted by the weather. A school like Tennessee seemed to have a little bit of an exaggeration in there on that. Now, the Georgia, the 83,000, that's pretty well documented, given the fact that you can look around and see almost every seat filled. For Tennessee, you know, maybe there was a little bit of exaggeration there. At least that's what some people seem to think. Last story we'll get to here for SEC through. I thought it was an interesting tweet from Wanya Morris, the four-star offensive lineman from Grayson High School. Not really in the mix for Georgia, never really has been, but is going to choose on May 1st, the same day as Owen Papo, between Auburn and Tennessee. And it sounds like Morris is about ready for this to be over. Here's what Morris put out on Twitter. If you're watching on video, you can see it. He says, I can't wait to put this recruiting stuff to rest. May 1st, hurry up and get here. That's what Wanya Morris wants to be able to do. There has been some talk from the Auburn side of things here and the Tennessee side of things here that there's a tug of war, that Morris maybe changed his mind here a couple of times, and this is becoming one of those difficult recruitments to predict here. So we'll see how that plays out. I do think the fact there's even any kind of momentum right now for Morris to Tennessee would sort of speak maybe poorly of the chances that you know, Auburn can kind of create that momentum on May 1st it wants to with Owen Papo. So I think that's kind of an interesting story. Morris going to Tennessee, does that move Papo closer to Georgia? We'll pay attention to that and make that your SEC through. And we'll do that by saying hello to John Shin here. John, thanks for your time today on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Thanks for being back with us. How are you today?
Good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. And, you know, when I reached out to you to have you on the show, I will admit – it was a slightly different conversation then than it's turned out to be now. I wanted to talk to you about Georgia's chances of getting Jay Hayes away from Oklahoma. As we found out yesterday, Hayes, the graduate transfer from Notre Dame, has chosen to, I guess, break that commitment to Oklahoma and go to the University of Georgia. So let me start this way. What did Oklahoma see in Hayes to begin with?
A guy that started at Notre Dame, and beyond that, I don't think they knew very much about him. I mean, this guy went from, I think, the first weekend, the first Saturday in April, he announced he was leaving Notre Dame. The second Saturday in April, he's on an official visit to Norman. So, I mean, really in the span of about 3 days, they put that official visit together. I'm not sure how much Georgia knows about him either. It's one of those deals of, This is not like recruiting a high school kid where you have to do a bunch of homework and all this other stuff. If you're taking a grad transfer, it's because you have an open scholarship. And if you don't give it to that grad transfer, you know, there's probably a senior walk-on that gets a scholarship for next year. And it's also, you're kind of risk-free. You can't affect your APR. If he doesn't work out, no big deal. If he does, great. So I don't think OU did very much homework on him. I doubt Georgia has. It's just, hey, this is a guy that started Notre Dame. Perhaps he can help.
Well, what it reminds me of is, you know, there was a line that Charles Barkley, the NBA Hall of Famer and also an analyst, when Tony Parker got drafted by the San Antonio Spurs, Barkley said, I've never heard of him, but if they're taking him in the first round, he must be pretty good. And, you know, there is that same thought here, too, of, well, if he was at Notre Dame, you know, Notre Dame's major college program, you know, they typically recruit pretty well. If Notre Dame wanted him, then he must have been pretty good, right?
Yeah, but there's this, I wrote it and said it, you know, on the Facebook Lives I do here. But the other deal you got to remember about grad transfers, and this is for everybody, if they were, you know, I know it's that this is the case in Oklahoma, and I'm sure it's this way in Georgia. You know, difference makers are guys who are likely pros. If he were a likely pro, wouldn't he be getting ready for the NFL draft starting today?
Yeah, fair enough. Did have 7 tackles against Georgia a year ago, and there was another Georgia reporter that had tweeted out some – I don't really know how Pro Football Focus tabulates their stats, but they gave him a pretty high grade, even in comparison to some of Georgia's guys from a season ago that were pretty good. So, you know, in Georgia's case, John, this is a position that Kirby Smart has been very adamant about needing more depth. And as you know, it's hard for a true freshman to kind of come in, you know, and be able to provide that depth. So from one standpoint, just having a guy that's got that college experience, if you're talking about, you know, depth and being, you know, maybe a backup rotational type player, a little easier for a guy that's already played before to do that in comparison to, say, maybe a true freshman, because I'm sure the Big 12 is just like the SEC on this. When you look at those all-conference lists, when you look at those, you know, contributing player lists, you see fewer true freshmen as defensive linemen standing out probably than any other position in the sport right now.
And then the other deal is you're 100% right on defensive linemen. Backup and rotational player play a lot. I know this has happened in Big 12 and happened in other leagues. I've seen guys who don't technically start make all-conference teams.
Yeah,
because
you're right.
Just on the defensive line spots, you know, everybody, you know, you may not be a starter, but you may very well play 40% of the snaps or 50% or higher. It's just, it's one of those deals that you can never have too many defensive linemen. It's just impossible to do it.
So the last time we had you on a Dog Nation Daily, we obviously were talking about the lead up to the Rose Bowl. It ends up being one of the great college football games, certainly of the 2017 season, if not, you know, maybe of all time. Obviously, the people that listen to this show have fonder memories of that than the people who read your work every single day. But I guess I am curious, from the Oklahoma side of things, how is that Rose Bowl going to be remembered?
Not that well, but OU has this, you know, astonishing string of high-profile bowl games it was one of the best football games I've ever seen live or in person. But Oklahoma's lost a lot of those over the last, I'd say, 15 years or so. When you think back to the 2006 Fiesta Bowl, there's got to be more of them in there, just off the top of my head that I can think of. But to me, that doesn't take away from the fact that that was just an amazing football game in an amazing environment.
Is it fair to say that a lot of Oklahoma fans view the Lincoln Riley decision to squib kick there at the end of the first half as one of those potential death knell moments for the game, that with a big lead coming off the catch by Baker Mayfield for a touchdown, that was the moment that sort of opened the door for Georgia to get back in it? Is that kind of the way that's sort of viewed from Oklahoma fans right now?
Well, it was viewed that it's one of those feels of you can blame Lincoln Riley for it, but he didn't make Austin Cyber kick it right at a guy, did he?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of one of those deals of, like, sometimes with college fans, they are low. If that's in the NFL, they're ripping the kicker. I'll say that. And I know the way squib kicks work. You don't fire it right at a guy, and that's what he happened to do. And, yes, you're 100% right. That changed the whole momentum. And it was amazing the way Georgia's special teams really helped flip the momentum in the last 31 minutes of that game. Special teams-wise, they did absolutely everything right.
And I guess I'm hopeful. I don't know if we'll ever see a home-and-home between these two teams, but I'd love for that to not be the last time that Georgia and Oklahoma play, either in a high-profile bowl game like what happened back in January in Pasadena. I thought the Oklahoma fans did a great job of really supporting their team. And, you know, these two schools aren't even in the same time zone all that much. It was kind of nice to have them in the same city there that day. I think a lot of the Georgia fans would say that as a pretty good brand of football, two contrasting styles, it made for a fascinating matchup. I'm sure that you would agree that seeing Georgia and Oklahoma play again at some point actually be a pretty fun thing to do.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, a home and home in Norman and Athens, I think, would be fantastic. But as we all know with college football, because this stuff is scheduled so far out, unfortunately, that, you know, you never know if you're going to get that stuff. I'm sure Georgia's the same case that OU has. I mean, they've got these home and home scheduled. I think they have one like 12 years out already. I mean, it's just incredible the way they do that stuff. And, you know, sometimes it works out great and other times it doesn't. But, if you could get OU and Georgia together, particularly in a home and home, which Oklahoma and Georgia are still more than willing to do, that would be fantastic for college football.
Let me finish up with this, and this is kind of off the subject of Georgia, but I am curious while we have you on the phone. Where do you think Baker Mayfield goes? We're obviously recording this on a Thursday and broadcasting live here. on a Thursday NFL draft first round. It's tonight. I've heard everything from, you know, fifth, sixth, first overall. There's some rumors about that. I'm sure your readers are paying close attention to this. Where do you think Mayfield lands here in the first round of the NFL draft?
What I had to write for Die Hard yesterday, I had him going third overall to the Jets because I think the Jets cleared their quarterback's bench. They have to have a quarterback, and it looks like whoever it is going to play this year. And I think, you know, from talking to the NFL people I know, there may be some questions about long-term who the best quarterback in this draft will be, but just about all of them I talked to on, you know, that if you're looking for, you have to have a week one starter, they all agree Mayfield's your best option. You're talking about a guy with over 40 college starts, and that's something that none of those other guys can offer.
Well, John, it is always fun to have you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. You always do a great job. We appreciate your insight. Where can folks find you on Twitter? Where can they read you at Diehards for a lot of the stuff that you're providing? Where can we find you?
Twitter, you can find me at @JOHN_SHINN, SHINN, and they can find all my stuff at diehards.com/Oklahoma. And just for Georgia fans, just hope Jay Hayes didn't decide to go visit somewhere else this weekend. Maybe he can go 3 for 3 on commitment. Because that's the other deal you have to explain to people is, you know, when you offer a scholarship to a high school kid and he accepts, you know, generally they don't take a visit the next week. But these grad transfers, it's a free-for-all because he can't sign until he graduates from Notre Dame. So there's nothing to prevent him from doing that.
Yeah, that is well said, John. Thanks for your time. We'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
All right. Talk to you later, man.
Good stuff there from John Shinn, and it's kind of funny what he drops in there at the end. You know, I was looking online yesterday at what some of the Oklahoma fans were saying, and they were baffled by this. And it just goes to show you that there's such a culture shock around college football here in terms of, you know, how different fan bases in different, you know, parts of the country are. You know, the fact that he was committed to Oklahoma, the Oklahoma fans all thought, well, that means he's coming to Oklahoma. I mean, he's committed to Oklahoma. But down here in the SEC, you know, we do this all the time. You know, the idea, this is every day for us, you know, the idea of somebody being committed somewhere, that's not anything. You know, you just go on and move right on and, you know, get on to the next battle here in terms of trying to break that commitment. So the fact that Jay Hayes was committed to Oklahoma, I don't think one Georgia fan thought two things about that. Not because Oklahoma's not a formidable recruiting foe, just because the idea of a commitment, until everything is sort of settled and done here, you're going to keep that battle going. So it is kind of funny from a culture perspective. A lot of the Oklahoma fans, and I saw them responding to Jay Hayes on Twitter, they did not understand why committed didn't mean rock solid, 100% guarantee to go to Oklahoma. But folks in the SEC, that's just the way that the recruiting ball bounces every single day. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, every day we do our Gatorator countdown. 184 days, Georgia beats Florida again. By the way, congratulations to the Diamond Dogs who beat Tech again last night. We'll see you tomorrow.